Depending on where you live in the world, the technology you interact with every single day fundamentally changed this morning.
Yeah, it really did. Like overnight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Today is Wednesday, July 15th, 2026. And, if you woke up in China today and opened your smartphone to chat with ByteDance's Doubao or Alibaba's Quan.
Which are massive, by the way. Millions of people use them.
Right. Massive AI companions. If you open them up, you just found a blank space. The human-like agent features, like those emotional support systems, were just completely switched off at dawn, pulled like a plug.
It's a stunning visual, honestly, because we're not talking about a pop-up warning label here.
No, not at all.
And we aren't talking about a background content filter either. This was a hard, complete shutdown of the first major market consumer companion chatbots.
Wow. And, that stark contrast is really the perfect anchor for what we are digging into today. Because while Beijing forced a hard stop this morning, nine time zones away in Washington and over in Silicon Valley, a completely different mechanism is playing out.
A very different one, yeah.
So our mission for this deep dive is to take a massive stack of fresh reports, legal filings, and, internal memos from the past few months and trace one undeniable through line. Because when you look at the receipts, the frontier AI industry has collectively decided that safety has become inconvenient.
What's fascinating here is that to really understand the gravity of that, we need to clarify what we mean by frontier AI.
Right about.
Because we are not talking about like the basic customer service bot that helps you reset a password. Frontier AI refers to the absolute cutting edge, massive
The
models.
ones designed to reason and code.
Exactly, to act autonomously at a near human level. And what is so fascinating about the documents we are analyzing today is that we are not looking at a story of accidental
Right,
carelessness.
it's not just an oops.
No, we aren't looking at engineers making honest mistakes. This is a story of deliberate calibration. Across the board, we are seeing safety infrastructure being treated not as a working control to prevent harm, but as a compliance surface.
Okay, let's unpack this for the listener, because that term is going to come up a lot today. A compliance surface. It's essentially a box to check, right?
Yeah, pretty much
It's
so.
designed to satisfy auditors and lawyers right up until the moment it gets in the way of shipping a product. And today, we are going straight to the sources. We're looking at internal safety teams dissolving, companies only complying when a judge physically forces them to take.
Which we have the legal filings for.
Right. And a massive gap in how the industry measures AI failure, plus what happens when national security meets fake guardrails. But we're also going to look at a university team that proves real coded safety is entirely possible.
And the contrast of that university team is really what makes this entire situation so urgent.
Because it shows it can be done.
Exactly. If we know it can be done, the decision not to do it is an active choice. And to figure out how that choice gets made, we have to start inside the building.
With the actual people, right?
Right, with the people actually tasked with alignment and safety.
Well, I was looking at the timeline of departures you shared with me before we started recording, and I mean, it looks like a mass exodus inside these tech giants. Who exactly is walking out the door here?
Let's start with OpenAI. Just this past Friday, Johannes Heideck.
Their head of safety systems, right?
Yes. He informed his team he is leaving. His last day is actually set for July 24.
Wow. Okay.
But the crucial detail isn't just his departure, it's what happens to the architecture he leaves behind. The entire safety systems team is being folded into the research division.
Wait, folded into research? How do they justify that?
Well, the mechanism they are using to justify this is laid out pretty plainly in a memo from their chief research officer, Mark Chen.
Okay, what did he say?
He wrote that safety work is now integrated with frontier model development.
Integrated, right.
Structurally, Mia Gless becomes VP of Research and Safety, with Satya Jain stepping in as interim head.
Okay, let's unpack this
Yeah.
because on paper, integrated sounds like, a positive corporate buzzword.
Sure, it sounds great.
But merging safety into research feels a bit like letting the head chef also serve as the restaurant's health inspector. I mean, sure, the inspection process is now highly integrated into the kitchen, but who is actually empowered to stop the bad soup from going out to the dining room?
That tension is exactly what the internal documents reveal. And from an accountability standpoint, the implications are just massive for the future.
How so? Like,
Legally. Think about a scenario where a model causes harm and plaintiffs subpoena the company's safety records. The first question a lawyer asks during discovery is, who reviewed this launch?
right. Who signed off on this?
Exactly. Who signed off on the safety parameters? When you dissolve a distinct, independent safety systems team, you eliminate an independent approval chain. That makes the answer to who approved this incredibly murky. It fundamentally changes the discovery map for any litigation moving forward.
Wow. And, you know, HIDEC isn't an isolated case either. Looking at this list, this looks like a systemic collapse of safety leadership.
It absolutely is. Let's just look at the sheer scale of the turnover since January. Ryan Biermeister,
the VP of product policy.
Right, left early in the year. Andrea Vallone, who handled model policy, she left for Anthropic around the same time.
Okay, that's two.
Then on February 11, Dr. Zoe Hitzig quit and published this really blistering New York Times essay.
Oh, I remember that. Arguing that the company is repeating the early mistakes of social media. Right.
Exactly. And on that exact same day, February 11th, the mission alignment team was entirely dissolved.
Wait, entirely dissolved?
Entirely. Joshua Akiam took over as chief futurist, and now we know he is leaving at the end of July.
Unbelievable.
Add to that Fiji Simo stepping down from the board on July 9.
So if you're keeping track, that is six major safety and policy leads walking out the door in under 7 months. And it is not just one company, right? Because
right.
It mentioned Anthropic.
It's Anthropic.
Which was literally founded on the premise of being the safety-conscious alternative. They're facing the exact same internal pressure.
Correct. Dr. Marinik Sharma, Anthropic's head of safeguards research, resigned on February 9th.
Wow.
And he didn't just quietly update his LinkedIn. He wrote a public warning stating that the world is in peril.
That's a heavy phrase.
It is. When the dedicated safety organizations at the world's leading AI labs evaporate in the span of half a year, the industry's default response of, "We are integrating safety into research," rings entirely hollow.
Yeah, I'd say so.
You know, you cannot outsource your risk management to an independent team and then dissolve the team when they actually try to manage the risk.
So if the internal safety teams are gone and the health inspector has been fired, who is actually keeping these models in check? Let me play devil's advocate for a second here.
Sure.
Because in Silicon Valley, there's a long tradition of agile development.
Mm.
You move fast, you ship a product, you see how the real world interacts with it.
Move fast and break things.
Exactly. And when you spot a problem, you patch it.
Yeah.
So couldn't you argue this is just the iterative process at work?
Well, you could argue that for a new software feature, maybe. But the evidence doesn't support that for safety controls.
Why not?
Because the iterative agile model implies a proactive desire to improve the product once a flaw is discovered.
Right.
But what the legal filings show is that these companies only move when outside enforcement physically arrives. Safety costs money and, you know, it slows down the engineering roadmap. Enforcement costs more.
So it's about the bottom line.
Right. They are calibrating against the cost of the penalty, not the cost of the harm to the user.
Okay, let's look at Character Technologies as a prime example of that calibration. Because in January, they were staring down five federal lawsuits regarding harm to teenagers.
Yeah, including the Garcia case.
Right, the Garcia case.
Yeah.
And on January 7, Judge Ansi Conway made a ruling that essentially terrified the entire AI industry. She refused to grant Section 230 protections to the chatbot output.
Specifically for the company's co-founders, Noam Shazir and Daniel DeFreitas Adiwarsana. We need to unpack why that is a watershed moment in tech law. Section 230 is the classic internet shield law. It says a platform like a social media site is not legally responsible for the things its users post.
Because the platform is just the host.
Exactly. And Character Technologies tried to argue that their AI chatbot's output is just protected speech, no different than a user posting a comment.
But Judge Conway rejected that.
She did. By rejecting that argument, she essentially categorized the AI's output as a product manufactured by the company, not third-party speech.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That opens the door to massive product liability and deposition risk. So Character Technologies did not stop shipping their companion product to teens when parents first started complaining.
They waited.
They only settled the Garcia case on January 7 because legal discovery threatened to crack open their internal emails and code repository.
Right. Enforcement forced their hand. And the enforcement pressure didn't stop in America either.
No, it didn't.
Because just last week, on July 9, Italy's data protection authority, the Garante, stepped in. They fined Character Technologies 158,000 euros.
And what was the reasoning for the fine?
Ineffective age verification, weak safeguards for minors, and filing a data protection impact assessment late.
Notice the pattern here. the Florida wrongful death docket did not compel them to voluntarily audit their age gates globally.
Nope.
A European privacy regulator had to step in and force the issue. The safety intervention arrived from outside the building.
We saw the exact same dynamic play out with Meta just a few days ago, actually. On July 10th, Eli Tan reported the New York Times that Meta killed their Muse image feature.
Right, I saw that.
For you listening, Muse image was a tool that let Instagram users generate AI images based on other people's public photos. And they killed it just 4 days after launch. 4 days. But they didn't kill it because they suddenly realized letting anyone remix your personal photos into AI generations was your privacy nightmare. They killed it because SAG-AFTRA and major Hollywood talent agencies immediately complained.
See, the underlying privacy problem existed on day one.
Right.
The engineering team knew exactly what the feature did. Meta shipped it anyway. The retraction only came when entities with highly paid lawyers pushed back. This gets back to your earlier point.
About agile development.
Right. They aren't building brakes to stop the car from crashing. They're just building thicker bumpers so the company doesn't feel the impact of the lawsuit. That is the definition of a compliance surface.
So if these companies are only responding to the immediate threat of lawsuits or massive fines, what happens in countries where regulators simply don't wait for a lawsuit to act?
That's a huge divergence.
It is. And just to be clear to you listening, we are just looking at the mechanical facts of international tech regulation here. We're not endorsing any particular government's approach, but the contrast is undeniable. We mentioned at the top that Beijing ordered ByteDance's Doubao and Alibaba's Kuen to switch off their human-like agent features today, July 15th.
Right, that's his shutdown.
The regulators specifically targeted the risk of emotional dependence in minors.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, if we look at the mechanics of what happened in Beijing, they did not fine these companies after a harm occurred.
Yeah.
And they didn't ask for a warning label to be placed on the app. They conditioned market access on the complete removal of a specific narrow capability. They evaluated companion chatbot dependence in minors and categorized it as an existing active harm.
An existing harm requiring an immediate engineering change. Now, compare that exact same week to the West. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission opened a docket on July 1st to gather public comments on AI accuracy.
Just comments.
Just comments. That is docket FTC 2026-0859, and it sits open until July 31. And over in Europe, the EU adopted an opinion on July 8 for a code of practice on deepfake labels, but it is strictly voluntary.
Voluntary labels.
Yeah. So I have to ask you listening, what does it mean for you when the consumer products you rely on every day are governed by a public comment box in one hemisphere and a hard kill switch in the other?
It means that Washington and Brussels are treating the exact same category of technological risk as a topic for future guidance rather than a design constraint for today.
Right. They're punting it.
Because Western regulators are still relying on voluntary disclosure regimes, the gap between an active government order and a month-long comment period is where these companies are currently operating.
That's a massive gap.
It is. And frankly, it is where the next generation of users is spending its time.
And because Western regulators are primarily asking for voluntary labels, like just asking companies to say, hey, this is AI, these vendors are taking advantage of that gap to hide exactly how badly their models fail in critical human-facing areas.
Oh, the healthcare data is a perfect example of this.
It really is. Let's talk about the scoreboard that nobody fills in. On July 9, a fascinating paper dropped on Arklev, introducing a virtual environment called Mental Hospital.
This paper is a brilliant piece of measurement architecture. The researchers built a virtual environment around the SOAP workflow.
Okay, break that down for us. SOAP.
It stands for Subjective Objective Assessment Plan. It is the gold standard workflow for psychiatric diagnostic assessments globally.
Okay.
They took 11,193 de-identified patient records across 76 different disorders and ran the AI models through the environment.
And the results for the AI were brutal. I mean, the absolute best model they tested trailed human clinicians by a massive 37.28 points.
Nearly 40 points. That's a huge gap.
Right. But where it failed is the really interesting part. It failed specifically at the mental status assessment. That is the subjective part of the SOAP workflow.
So why is that specific phase so impossible for a frontier model?
Because the subjective phase requires eye-to-eye work.
Like reading the room.
Exactly. It requires a clinician to evaluate the tone of a patient's voice, their physical body language, and crucially, the incongruence between what a patient says and how they actually appear.
Oh, so if a patient says they're fine, but they're trembling. Exactly. A language model processes text. It cannot perform the nuanced multimodal synthesis required to decide whether the chart actually matches the human being sitting in the room.
Makes sense.
But the real story here isn't just that the models failed the test. It is that the industry is actively ignoring the test's existence.
Right, because this benchmark isn't new, is it?
No, the VERAMH benchmark for this kind of evaluation was published back on February 11th, 2026, by Bentley and a team at Spring Health.
Yeah.
Any vendor could run their model against it in an afternoon.
Yet absolutely zero of the six major large language model vendors have published a VERAMH score.
Zero.
It is completely hidden. So what does this all mean? It is like an automaker selling a car and flat out refusing to publish the crash test ratings simply because the law only strictly requires them to stick a label on the bumper that says, this is a car.
That is the core of the issue. The European Commission's voluntary code of practice asked for labels on deepfakes and notices that you were talking to a bot.
Right, surface stuff.
But disclosure of existence is not transparency of performance. The tools to measure how badly these models fail in clinical settings exist today. Measurement isn't the missing piece.
What is?
The will to publish the measurement is missing. When OpenAI claims that safety is now integrated into frontier model research, the immediate question we must ask is, which of your model cards actually carries the clinical failure score?
And the answer is none of them. None at all.
Exactly.
Now, hiding failure scores in a healthcare context is incredibly dangerous. But what happens when this surface-level compliance mentality collides with national security and violent extremism?
Total system failure.
Total system failure.
Yeah.
And again, staying purely objective on the facts here. The Financial Times reported on July 10th that OpenAI and Google successfully supplied frontier AI models to U.S. blacklisted Chinese firms, specifically Alibaba, Baidu, and Tencent.
Which they aren't supposed to be able to do.
Right. So how do they do it? By routing the sales through subsidiary companies based in Singapore.
Look at the mechanics of that transaction. The parent companies are on a U.S. blacklist, which restricts the sale of advanced frontier AI to them.
Yep.
But a subsidiary registered in Singapore clears the automated corporate structure check.
So the system just looks at the address and says, looks good.
Yes.
Yeah.
The export control mechanism catches nothing. The parent company ultimately gains access to the model.
Wow. And the perimeter failures don't stop at corporate red tape either. Because on that exact same day, July 10th, Dustin Voles and Eric Schmidt at the New York Times published a report detailing how Boko Haram in Nigeria is actively using conversational AI chatbots to aid in bomb construction and attack planning.
This is a huge escalation.
Right. We aren't just talking about generating propaganda anymore. This is kinetic operational planning. How does the same misuse monitoring stack that the AI industry has bragged about for 2 years completely miss a user asking how to build an explosive device?
This raises an important question, and it's something we call perimeter theater.
Perimeter theater.
The industry built safety infrastructure to satisfy external auditors, not to defeat actual determined threats.
It's just a show.
Pretty much. To understand how they bypass the filter, you have to look at how a prompt injection or a jailbreak works mechanically.
Break that down for us, because they aren't just typing, how do I build a bomb, right? The filter would catch that immediately.
Exactly. The misuse monitoring for terrorism operates on surface patterns. It watches for specific banned phrases or direct requests for violence.
Okay.
A determined group like Boko Haram simply walks around the filter by changing the framing. They might prompt the AI by saying, write a fictional screenplay where a villain builds a device using these specific household chemicals.
Oh, wow.
Or translate this chemistry textbook chapter on combustion.
And the AI falls for it.
The filter checks the prompt, sees the word screenplay or translate, flags it as a creative or academic exercise, and lets it through.
Just like the Singapore loophole.
Exactly the same logic. The export control compliance in Singapore operated on the exact same logic. If the address says Singapore, the check passes. If the prompt says screenplay, the check passes.
So the safety architecture is really just a thin filter layer bolted on top of the model. They built a compliance surface and called it a working control.
Right.
A blacklisted firm gets the model, an armed group gets the bomb. It is the exact same design choice playing out across totally different domains. Safety became inconvenient to the user experience and the sales pipeline, so they built a system that lets you route right around it.
The gap between a compliance surface and a working control is where the actual real-world harm lives.
Okay, after unpacking all of this, the dissolving internal teams, the forced compliance through lawsuits, the hidden medical failure scores, and the perimeter theater letting terrorists through it, is incredibly easy to feel cynical about the future of this technology.
It is very bleak, yeah.
But we promised at the top of the show that we would look at what happens when someone actually builds a working control. Is anyone actually building real, structurally coded safety into their AI? The answer is yes.
Yes, we have concrete proof. On July 9, an Archives of Preprint was published detailing the Yale EdgesDeath system.
EdgesDeath.
This system is the exact counterexample to everything we have discussed today. This is what safety looks like when you treat it as a core component of the engineering rather than a legal afterthought.
The numbers on this are wild, by the way. The Yale team tested this system blind on 43 real emergency room cases. EdgesDeath caught 78% of the true medical emergencies.
Right, and then they compared it to a baseline?
Yeah, they ran standard GPT-5 against the same cases, and it only caught 52%.
That's a massive difference, and then they ramped up the difficulty.
They ran it on the New England Journal of Medicine's notoriously hard diagnostic cases.
The NEJM cases.
Right, EdgesDeath got the right diagnosis in his top three choices 63% of the time, compared to GPT-5's 51%.
The clinical safety impact there is just undeniable. Their composite safety score jumped from 4.31 to 4.55. In statistical terms, the odds of that performance gap being a random fluke are less than 1 in 4,000.
Right.
It is a massive, life-saving leap in accuracy.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. How did they actually do it? Because they didn't just throw more computing power at it. Or train a bigger model with more parameters, did they?
No, not at all. They changed the architecture itself. They inserted a smaller forced step into the model's processing loop. It is a mechanism called a verification gate.
A verification gate. Okay, how does that work?
Before the EdgesDeath system outputs a single word of advice to the doctor, it is forced to stop and ask itself internally, what would kill this person if I got this wrong?
Oh, wow. It basically double checks itself for lethality.
Exactly. It quarantines its initial thought, runs that catastrophic failure question against a hard-coded screening list, and only after it clears that gate does it provide the differential diagnosis to the user.
That is incredible. It literally forces the AI to pause and check its own work against the worst-case scenario. And OpenAI does not have a verification gate.
Nope.
Anthropic does not have one. Google does not have one. The Yale team built one. They polish the code for the world to see, and they prove that it catches the life-threatening emergencies that the plain frontier models would have sent home.
Which is, it's just wild to think about.
Which begs the obvious question, right? If a university team can publish the code to boost emergency detection by 26 points, why aren't the trillion-dollar tech giants doing it?
Because a verification gate slows the model down. It increases the computational cost of every single query, and it interrupts the fluid, instantaneous conversation that consumers have been trained to expect.
So it's inconvenient.
Exactly. Right. It requires deliberate engineering that prioritizes safety over sheer speed and profit margins. EdgesDeath is what a safety memo looks like when someone actually writes the code.
You can't just integrate that away.
Yeah, right. You cannot merge this kind of structural safeguard into a broad research team. You have to actively build it into the foundation of the product.
It is the ultimate proof that the technology isn't the limiting factor. The corporate willpower is.
Well said.
So let's pull all of this together. Today, we tracked a very clear, heavily documented path. We saw the internal desks being folded and the executives walking out at OpenAI and Anthropic.
Right.
We saw Character, AI, and Meta only moving on minor safety and privacy when a judge or a union forced their hand. We watched Beijing literally pull the plug on companion bots while the West simply asks for voluntary comments.
The hidden failure scores, too.
Yes, we found the hidden failure scores in mental hospital, and we unpacked the perimeter theater that let corporate blacklists and Boko Haram slip right through the cracks. And finally, we saw the hard-coded proof from Yale that real safety is possible if you actually want to build it.
The receipts are all there, and, you know, the through line is undeniable.
It really is. And for you, the listener, whether you are chatting with a companion bot tonight to pass the time or trusting an AI to summarize a critical document at work tomorrow, you need to remember something vital. The safety net underneath you right now might just be an internal corporate memo, not actual running code.
And this leaves us with a critical question for the immediate future. If the multi-billion dollar vendors have effectively abandoned structured safety in favor of mere compliance,
right.
What happens when open source developers realize the guardrails they've been copying for years were always just theater?
Oh, man.
Does the facade of safety collapsing actually pave the way for more honest user-controlled AI, or does it just accelerate the race to the bottom?
That is the exact question we are going to be watching as this next wave of models ships. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay informed, and we will catch you next time.